This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 70 and a bit, the Easter egg bonus special. For the week beginning Monday, the 20th of April, 2009, a special extra edition of the Bugle to commemorate our week off, with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in the officially ratified City of London, and also in London, but not in the studio, it's John Oliver. He's at his brother's wedding, and in fact, I think we can now do a world-exclusive live audio link-up to John arriving at his brother's wedding.
Hello, Buglers!
Well, sounds like it's going to be a big day. So, in the Bugle soundproof safe this week is the alleged Neapolitan mafia boss Giuseppe Sarno. Recently captured by the Italian police, he's been allowed to join us in the Bugle safe, as this is only a supplementary Bugle edition, so the laws of Italy do not apply during the recording as they do during regular podcasts. So we will not be hearing Signor Sarno's confessions and apologies throughout today's show. Also, just 91 years ago today, the 20th of April, ace German World War I fighter pilot the Red Baron shot down two opposition planes to take his record to 80 wins, no losses, or in baseball parlance, 80-0. But then just 91 years ago tomorrow, he took the loss to go 80-1 and promptly retired due to what is known in the sport of World War I fighter pilotry as a 100% non-remediable whole-body injury, or in layman's terms, being dead. I guess that was the problem with being a World War I fighter pilot. It was when your record went from and O to and 1. That was usually when you found yourself on the permanent DL until the end of time. That's one for the baseball fans. Time now for the Bugle Easter Egg Edition, but instead of being an ovoid confection of holy chocolate modelled on Jesus Christ's very own divine testiclets, our one-week-late audio Easter Egg is in fact a motley collection of leftovers and offcuts that were too explosively entertaining to be used at the time. Luckily, we were off duty over the real Easter, so avoided having to confront the big questions of the crucifixion, resurrection, donkey rides and so on, such as, did Jesus really die from septicemia caused by a rusty nail? And if so, how does this affect Christianity? Also, if Jesus hadn't died on the cross, and let's not forget, 1 in 20 people has a genetic immunity to crucifixion, would he have hopped down and thrown himself under a passing bus just to make sure that his career plan panned out how his daddy wanted it to? And if Jesus had been a fruit, what kind of fruit would he have been, and why? Even in this special free bonus edition, there is a section in the bin, and this week it's a home quarrying section. How to turn your home and garden into a valuable source of free rocks and minerals. What if, 50 metres under your kitchen, there is a valuable source of Angolan granite, or sapphires, or even purest natural concrete, and you never even knew? Could you live with that? Or maybe even like me, you could find a source of 100% buglite, the naturally occurring mineral that, when ground into a fine dust and smeared all over the face, imbues a person with the ability to record a podcast. Beware of the almost identical substance, bullshite. Actually, it is the same. Anyway, let the excavations begin. Step one, demolishing your property. We help you decide between the three Ds of varying degrees of violence: dismantle, demolish, or detonate. Plus, if you don't find anything well, you've got yourself a free personal landfill site. It's a win-win situation. There are some very special birthdays this week, including Tuesday the 21st is the birthday of none other than Her Majesty the Queen. 83 years young today, what a gal, doesn't look a day older than she did yesterday, although ironically, she is a day older than she was yesterday. She can be queen all she likes, she cannot hold back the passage of time, although like her 130-year-old mother, she is capable of defying it. On Wednesday the 22nd, it's the birthday of my sister Helen. Out she popped 29 years ago, and 1 week later, Alfred Hitchcock died. Read into that what you want, he obviously hated tiny little Zaltzmans and wanted no further part with the world. Thursday the 23rd is the birthday of John Oliver. I know it's hard to imagine a world without John Oliver now, but if you take yourself back to the beginning of April the 23rd, 1977, that's exactly what there was, as there had been for over 500 years. John will be celebrating his birthday this year by going for a picnic on top of Mount Rushmore with Lyndon Johnson, Babe Ruth and Greta Garbo or something. And here's a special Bugle birthday present for John. There you are, an audio puppy, John. Friend, companion, an emergency snack. So to mark these historic birthdays, here's a story from a couple of weeks ago about Lenin's arse. Lenin's arse news now, and Lenin no longer has an arse. A St. Petersburg statue of the former Soviet Big Cheese, now, of course, very much a dead man, has had its big bronze butt cheeks unceremoniously blown off by a bomb. Probably led off by a terrorist or a prankster. Pretty hard to tell the difference these days. Lenin, who used his arse for, amongst other things, sitting on his chair whilst writing communist diatribes, will now no longer be best remembered for spearheading one of the most significant political revolutions in human history, or even for his advocacy of mass executions, or even for having a head shaped like an egg. Or maybe even for his dreamy one-handed backhand. Now, he will always be known as the guy who had his arse blown off by a bomb. So, what a story, John. Has this been big in America, or not?
No, it hasn't, Andy.
That's a shame. You'd have thought they'd have jumped all over this.
I'm not sure it's been big anywhere. I think you've just...
Come on.
You just seized upon this because you liked it.
A guy blew Lenin a big new arsehole. I cannot believe... But after everything that went down in the Cold War, the American media has not been all over this.
I think this has hit Sir Mix-a-Lot particularly hard.
I think, you know, McCarthy would be absolutely slapping his own arse in his grave in delight. The statue originally actually only showed Lenin's peachy cheeks, well covered with a thick Russian overcoat. But the blast has left what can only be described as a massive arsehole in its place. Historians have claimed that whilst it is more than likely that Lenin did have a posterior sphincter, it is highly unlikely that it was big enough to be mistaken for a bomb site. But that, had he ever been tricked into sitting on a bomb in one of the assassination attempts periodically made against him, the statue as it now is could easily have been quite graphically realistic. Lenin's arse, of course, lived for 53 years, mostly at the top of the backs of his legs, and his embalmed batut is still on display in the Lenin Arsoleum in Red Square, Moscow. During Soviet times, there was in fact an annual ceremony in which the Politburo would kidnap the American ambassador, take him down to the mausoleum at the dead of night, pull the Lenin corpse's trousers down, and make the preserved communist moon the US dignitary. Experts claim that if Lenin had still been alive today, he would have without doubt had the perpetrator of the arse blast instantly executed for bringing into disrepute communism's most important buttocks. Interestingly, John,
yes.
On this subject...
Yes,
Soviet
Andrew.
Leaders throughout the history of the USSR, between them, averaged two buttocks a man. But that's only because Andropov and Chernenko had three each when Khrushchev had none.
I think you've got to really take a long, hard look, Andy, at the stories you're taking inspiration from.
Well, that is one in the eye for those communism sceptics and Tsar fans who thought Lenin was a complete arse. Now, if there's one thing being Miss Universe is all about, it's visiting controversial prison camps and saying you like them, as recently proved by a certain Miss Universe.
Guantanamo News now, and in her blog, Miss Universe has described her recent trip to Guantanamo Bay as being, and I quote, a loot of fun. Apparently it wasn't nearly as abusive as she'd been led to believe. She went on to say that she didn't want to leave the calm and beautiful place. Oh, Andy, I just wonder about what Mr. Universe is going to say about all of this. He's probably going to respond by covering himself in baby oil and flexing his muscles.
Yeah, this is pretty much his default response to everything, apart from a parking ticket. It just suggests that maybe the media have only been showing us one side of the story.
Yep.
When it comes to Guantanamo, you know, the sort of years and years of human rights abuses and questionable legality. But, you know, let's hear the positive side. Maybe it takes someone who's got an objective view on it, like Miss Universe, the most objectively beautiful woman in the whole universe.
That's right.
Maybe it takes her to see that actually it's fine.
And that's a democratically elected position, Andy. It is.
Of course, Barack Obama wants to close down Guantanamo in order to turn it into an international justice theme park. But should he really be doing this at a time when America has finally cracked the magic 1 million official terror suspects barrier, as not exclusively revealed on the Bugle a few weeks ago due to being edited out and revealed elsewhere first?
Terror news now, and, well, it finally happened, Andy. Many, many Bugles ago, we talked of the terrorist watch list being at 750,000. And how one day it might reach a million. Well, congratulations, everybody! That magic number has arrived. The US government's watch list now has 1 million entries. And, in fact, after the two of us about to mock it in this fashion, it may even have 1,000,002 before this bugle is done. The American Civil Liberties Union argue that it is now far too bloated to be effective, like late-period Marlon Brando.
There must be now, John, as many terror suspects as there were closet communists in the 1950s. But, you know, who gives a shit? Let's just enjoy the moment. But it does statistically mean now that some states probably do have a voting majority of terrorists in America. and that at least one member of New Kids on the Block is a fully paid-up Al-Qaeda member. Who's your money on?
New Kids. I always felt that. I don't like the way that Donnie looks down the camera.
Right, you're going for Donnie.
Am I thinking, is there a Donnie in New Kids, or am I thinking of the Osmonds?
There's certainly one in the Osmonds, John. Well, they're not mutually exclusive, as we all know.
Or
I'll just look it up.
Is there a Donnie? I thought there was Donnie. I think he's Mark Wahlberg's
brother. There is
Donnie
Wahlberg.
Donnie Wahlberg. Yes.
Then you're thinking of little Danny Wood, Joey McIntyre, Jordan Knight and Jonathan Knight, the current members. Was Mark Wahlberg not in New
No,
Kids
Marky
Block?
Mark was different.
Oh,
he had a brief, short-lived career off the back of his brother Donnie's fame. Donnie was the bad lad of the New Kids.
Really?
And I believe then Marky Mark also became famous through a Calvin Klein campaign where he wore his underpants.
All right.
And I think people liked that. And then he became Mark Wahlberg, the actor.
Right.
Yeah. Who then went on to executive produce Entourage.
Right.
That's without the internet.
Show what a... What a knife edge life is on, though, because I wear underpants as well, and I've never had quite those breaks.
But what brand do you wear, Andy?
I've absolutely no idea.
That is why you're a terrible spokesperson for underwear. You can't lie with your legs apart on a billboard like Beckham and just go have the slogan be, "I have absolutely no idea what these are."
The ones I've got on today are black, I think. Does that narrow it down at all?
That would be the second billboard. They're black. Does that narrow it down? You could make a fortune, Andy. The most oblique underwear spokesperson in history.
It also does now mean, John, that Al-Qaeda now has more supporters in the world than Tottenham Hotspur and the Brisbane Broncos put together. That's food for thought. Although, in this current world that we live in, that doesn't really like thought, that food is probably going to come chundering straight back up.
Or is this, Andy, just terrorism witnessing the kind of hyperinflation that has ruined the economy as well? Because there just can't be 1 million people in the world who are that stupid. There can't. There can't be a million morons. It just can't be. Maybe this is subprime national security. They're cooking the books.
Carl, you've done gigs in Derby. Let's just extrapolate that around the world. You are well more than a million. There you go. That is yours to take home, Buglers, if you want to take it home. Or are you going to risk it and go for the bonus film section as well? Of course you are, you inveterate gamblers and gamblerses. And let's see if you've won it. Yes, you have won it. Here is the film section that wasn't allowed to go in when we originally recorded it. Bugle feature section now and films. And, well, every week's a big week for films, John, as you yourself know only too well. So this week, we will be looking at how to make your own blockbuster using just an ordinary household film studio, 4 kidnapped Hollywood A-listers and $75 million worth of special effects. Also, how to stage your own gala premiere without having to go to the trouble of making a film in the first place. But first, we ask the big questions. Is it possible to direct a film without smoking big cigars? Plus, if silent movie legend Buster Keaton had been alive today, would he have used words or stuck to what he was good at? Also, what's the point in watching a film when you're going to die eventually anyway and forget all about it? And which are better, feature films or scrambled eggs? But first, here are some of the latest film releases hitting the cinemas this April. There's this one, John, So Far and Yet So Far, a riveting drama about Rudy Giuliani's doomed presidential campaign in 2008, running time 2 minutes. Starring Robert De Niro's Giuliani, Mary-Kate Olsen as love interest Hillary Clinton. Well, all films take a few liberties with historical facts. And Macaulay Culkin as the ghost of George Washington. Also a number of comedy films out this week, including Stamp of Class, a comedy set in the world of competitive stamp collection, as Bridget, a champion philatelist, has to co-opt Dennis, who hates stamps, into a mixed doubles team in the Michigan State Philately Championships. After her previous partner, Clovis, licked a poison stamp and died the day before the tournament, Bridget slowly persuades Dennis of the charms of stamp collecting, whilst Dennis seduces Bridget with a mixture of horseplay and a contrived script. Also, Be the Best, a comedy set in the world of competitive beekeeping. And It's a Mug's Game, a comedy set in the world of competitive amateur pottery. Plus, Brendan and Tallulah Get the Hump, a comedy set in the world of competitive camel hunting. And also, Branched Out, a comedy set in the world of competitive pollarding on the cutthroat pro-tree surgery circuit. Plus, Bunge Easter Bethlehem, Christian extreme sports documentary in which Reverend Murgatroyd Hoop ties a bungee rope to the spire of the village church in Penshurst, England, walks with increasing difficulty to the alleged birthplace of Jesus H. Christ, kisses something that looks like a manger, then jumps in the air and allows the bungee to twang him back home at supersonic speed, crashing through the stained glass in his home church. This film was designed to illustrate how Jesus always helps us find our way back home, especially if we're tied to a bungee rope. Plus, Turnips and Tangerines, a four-hour warts and all biopic of the fruit and vegetable stall owner Gladys Stringe, who ran a fruit and veg stall with her husband Ken in the England countryside for 40 years before retiring. In retirement, she took up knitting and made a cardigan for her grandson. And in one of the film's most touching scenes, she sells four apples to someone who had been at school with Princess Diana but doesn't realise it. Look out for Dame Judi Dench dressed as a cabbage and Hugh Grant headbutting himself in the background. Plus, the award-winning documentary, What If Hitler Had Been Less of a Dick? Anything to add, John? You've been in a film.
As a movie, I'm going to stop short of saying star, Andy. I'll say appearee.
Are you going to stop short of saying movie? Or...
No, I'm not. That had all the technical requirements of a movie. Shot on celluloid, projected onto a screen. What more do you f***ing want?
So what are you going to say? As a movie star, John?
Yeah, I just, I'd like to distance myself from your lampooning of our profession, you know.
Films, of course, often contain people in clothes. And if anyone ever makes a biopic of Prince Charles, perhaps entitled Air Today, Gone Tomorrow, The Prince and the Poor Par, that's the first ever Royal Golf film in which Charles luckily flukes a par four at St Andrews despite mishitting all of his shots. Or, for ball's sake, when the f*** is my mummy going to pop her clogs? I've got a crown to wear. Or maybe even Charles and the Magic Crocodile. That's fairly self-explanatory. Well, if those films are made, there would be some extremely smart clothes indeed, because of this. Triumphant British fashion sense news now, and Prince Charles has been voted the world's best-dressed man by Esquire magazine. What a triumph for the country this is, John. Our number one-ranked prince, first in line to the throne, bar none. Best dressed man in the world.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
The Prince Charles.
The Prince Charles.
You're not thinking about a rapper called Prince Charles?
No,
who's, wears nice suits. Are you sure?
No, he beat other prominent men such as professional President Barack Obama, Roger Federer, the Michelangelo of tennis, rapper Andre 3000.
Was that
Andre the 3000th? The latest in a long lineage of rappers dating back to prehistory.
He,
of course, succeeded his father, Andre, the 2999th.
That was a mouthful.
Who, in turn, had succeeded Gerald V. Like popes, but without having to resort to Latin in times of crisis. Prince Charles also beat other men such as novelist John Grisham, former Canadian skier Steve Podborski, our local plumber Steve, the lad that delivers the same pizza menu to our house almost every single day, and the guy who used to own number 53, who stole my bin, carried out illegal building work at 53, then rented 53 out to some pimps and prostitutes, moved away from 53, taking my bin with him, before recently having 53 repossessed by the bank.
Oh, so he's gone.
Justice!
He's gone.
The
bin thief has gone.
You're out of the game!
Listen to the joy in your voice, Andy.
I think his next-door neighbours were more concerned about him turning his house into a brothel there, but I was more concerned about the bin. But all of us are happy.
Do you think your bin had a similar kind of curse on it than the Egyptian tombs had?
Yeah, I think so. So, but basically, what I'm saying there is Prince Charles beat every single other man on the planet, even defeating notorious fashion icon and clothes horse John Oliver. John, I can't believe you missed out yet again.
Yeah, well, I can't believe that my combination of short-sleeve T-shirt over long-sleeve T-shirts has not caught the judge's eye. I mean, I'm wearing it literally every day.
Well, as I said, you are a clothes horse, albeit one whose only practical use is to be turned into clothes glue.
I literally now dress in the dark. Before the light changed, my bedroom is very dark in the morning, so I just put a short-sleeve T-shirt over a long-sleeve T-shirt, right. And then when I get to work, it's, a surprise. You think, oh, look at that. Look what's happened there. And for the first time, I was told to change recently. I was going out and I was wearing... This doesn't sound that bad to me, Andy. Like striped trousers, going down, vertical striped trousers, and a striped T-shirt, horizontal stripes. I was told to change at least one of those. I didn't realise that. Is that bad? Stripes
well,
and stripes?
Stripes make you look thin, and vertical stripes, horizontal stripes make you look kind of broad.
Right.
So maybe you're sending out mixed messages there.
Looked unbalanced.
Yeah, who are you trying to impress?
one.
Thin people or fat people. Got to make a choice.
Yeah. I'm a uniter.
Really?
Yeah.
I just think you're alienating everyone. Personally, I actually boycotted these awards, John, in protest against the clothes industry. Because I found it difficult to find a tiger print toweling dressing gown for an adult. I got one for my daughter and I want one for myself now. I can't find one, so I boycotted these awards until they rectify that situation.
Can I interject there, Andy, and say you cannot carry that off?
What?
A tiger print dressing gown. The only person who can carry that off is Burt Reynolds. Possibly Tom Selleck. You cannot do that.
What?
It would look really creepy, you in a tiger print dressing gown. Please never buy that. And if you do, never tell me that you've got one.
Well, Matilda's got one. Suits her.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
Are you saying she looks like Burt Reynolds?
No, she can carry it off.
All right.
I'm saying you don't look enough like Burt Reynolds to carry it off.
Okay.
A baby can do it. Even a female can do it. If you're not Burt Reynolds or Tom Selleck, you simply can't.
Anyway, Prince Charles was delighted by his award. He responded by running around his estate at Highgrove in a suit of armoured pyjama, shouting, "Yes! Yes! Yes! F***ing yes! I'm the best-dressed man in the world! Just imagine how many birds I'm going to pull when I'm allowed to wear a crown as well! Oh, yeah! How did you get on in the Best Dressed Woman Award, Mummy? Oh, not even on the podium, your royal scruffiness! Well, maybe you should stop asking God to save you and ask him to dress you instead!" Obama was only fourth. John, he would have been higher if he'd been allowed his wish of being inaugurated whilst wearing a Batman outfit with Joe Biden as Robin. But sadly, the rather conservative American powers that be didn't allow that. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to some more Natalie dressed banknotes. And now time for some of your emails. And this one comes in from Anna, who writes on the subject, penis-shaped countries. I think we can tell where this one's going. It appears we have untrousered a monster with our penis on the roof story. So, Anna writes, in the most recent issue of the Bugle, you read out an email from my brother, a member of the US military and the self-styled Pope of all the Jews, in which he boasted of the penis-like shape of his aircraft. I feel constrained to best his sally by drawing your attention to the shape of the country of Benin, where I worked for 2 years, which is exactly like a gentleman's yam and beignets, as one says in French. Attached, please find a map of this same prank pulled by the French colonial authorities against the British colonies of Nigeria and Ghana. Take that, Her Majesty's Commonwealth. Yours in solicitude, Anna. Well, you know, if you look at an atlas, you can see that Benin does bear a passing resemblance to meat and two veg. Can we put that up on the website? A map of Benin? There's nothing inherently offensive about that. You can draw your own conclusions. Tom, our producer, who's back from paternity leave. Welcome back, Tom. Enjoying fatherhood?
Yes, indeed.
Excellent. Tom has put up a slideshow of all the pictures you've sent in of stuff shaped like todgers. So well done, everyone involved. And at this stage of the Bugle, I feel it's incumbent upon all of us, both creating and listening to the Bugle, to raise our game a little bit. So do have a look on the website for the slideshow. And we do have an extra T-shirt to give away in addition to the two T-shirts we promised you about a month ago. So do get on the website, and the competition winners will be announced next week. I realise that is about the fifth time I've promised the announcement of the competition winners.
It is a three-line whip, though. Next week, right, we are closing the competition.
The competition's being I'm sure this contravenes all kinds of regulations.
It probably does.
It does look like I'm waiting until a member of my own family submits something half-decent. This email came from Christian Fisher in Denmark, of all places. Does that still exist? I haven't checked my atlas recently. Anyway, she writes, or he writes. I don't know, you just can't tell with the Danes, can you? Let's go with he. Dear Bugleers, this is to report that as of the 5th of April 2009, it's still possible to contribute funds towards Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential campaign. Well, thanks, Christian, and various others of you who've kept us up to date with Giuliani's ongoing campaign. It does look now like it is doomed to failure. Anyway, Christian continues, I wonder if his people are afraid to open up his sensory deprivation tank and inform him of the date and result of the election, in the same way that the staff at Buckingham Palace are afraid to go near the Queen for fear of being swallowed whole. So the good news is we can still help Rudy fulfil his dream. Buglers, do your duty. And this heartrending tale comes from Robert Armbrister in St. Louis, Missouri. who writes on the subject, "Is the Bugle causing unemployment? Hello, John and Andy. A little while back, I was let go from my job. As I went through the process of trying to collect unemployment and subsequently appealing when my claim was denied, I received in the mail a packet that included all information the Department of Employment got from my previous employer. As I read through the few charges that they claimed should keep me from getting unemployment, I noted that the last section complained that I was told that I could only listen to radio programming while I worked, and yet I had been downloading files to the computer. I had taken radio programming to include radio-like programming that I found on the internet, and had been doing so without complaint. Attached to this letter was a list of files I had downloaded. On this list, among a few football podcasts, is 42 episodes of The Bugle. You're a hero, man. Essentially, the reason I was fired can be whittled down to the fact that I was listening to The Bugle." I'm so sorry, but it sounds like the kind of job you didn't really want to have. Any job where you're not legally entitled to listen to The Bugle while you work, unless it's involving operating heavy machinery, there's not a kind of job we want any of our listeners to go to. Robert concludes, "Now I'm not asking for any rightfully deserved compensation from you two, but I will take it. I just want to stand as a warning. Your brand of satirical news told through cricket jokes and rap lyrics might be doing more than misinforming people about current events and creating new British stereotypes." I think he's seen through us like a glass of water there. It might be costing people their jobs. I'm the first, but how many could be next? Still a loyal listener. Thank you for sticking with us through this very difficult time, Robert. You are a hero. To other Bugle listeners, just remember, it's easy to live without money. It's difficult to live without podcasts, as Aristotle himself once said. So do keep your emails flooding into thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and we'll be back with more of them next week. Bugle sport now, and well, it's not a full Bugle, so there's not a lot of sport this week. What has happened, though, is that Angel Cabrera won the US Masters Golf, the Augusta Masters Golf, from Kenny Perry and Chad Campbell. Now, none of these three gentlemen are what you'd call svelte, and Cabrera and Perry are not what you'd call young, either. So I think, well, this was one of the greatest moments in sporting history. These gentlemen have proved to the world that to be an elite-level sportsman, you no longer have to be an elite-level sportsman, as long as you're playing golf. Heroes. Kenny Perry at 48 was within a whisker of becoming the oldest ever golf champion in a major. It could still be us, Tom. I'm working on the build. The golf will come later. Well, the Bugle forecast this week, in the absence of John Oliver, probably in the middle of a two-hour set at his brother's wedding, doing all his best old jokes. As I said, it's John's birthday this week. So he'll be a year older in the next Bugle, but will he be a year wiser? I guess my prediction is no, he won't. That's my prediction. Tom, you're now a father, as you weren't last time you were.
I'm much wiser.
So you've become
wiser.
Last
time I saw you, yeah, I have to fatherhood. Say. Much more chastened and scared now. Fatherhood's great, labour's not. Well, I don't know about John. I think the childishness might be terminal.
I think it might be terminal. Yeah. I think I've become more infantile since I had children.
This is a disturbing John's more infantile with you.
So, that's it. I hope you've enjoyed our Bugle Easter Egg special. Thanks for listening. I hope and assume that you've enjoyed it. Do join us next week for a full Bugle with John back in the USA and me still here in London. Bye-bye, Buglers.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.